Hello and welcome to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. I'm really excited to see you and speak to you tonight as we're going to be discussing some really important things that are very, very close, not only to my own career, but also to my heart. We're going to be discussing how to teach boys, the importance of life skills. And I've got a really amazing guest tonight, Shelley Bridger, who is the Deputy CEO and head teacher of a school in Medway in Kent. So yes, welcome to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle.
Live from Herne Bay, this is The Twilight Show with Charlie Rozelle.
Yes, hello and welcome to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. Thank you once again for your company. It's amazing to have you. So we're talking about teaching boys tonight and the importance of teaching life skills. We're going to be discussing an expert in our profession about how this is done. And also, I'm going to be taking your calls and ideas to see what you think. Welcome once again.
Live from Herne Bay, this is The Twilight Show with Charlie Rozelle on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Yes, hello, and once again, welcome to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. Now, we are at the end of our third week back in school, and it has been a really quite an interesting week for me. I've had lots going on this week, and one of the funny things that's happened to me is that on my way back from work on Monday, I decided that I would go to the gym, and I ended up really quite hurting myself, and I ended up walking around work like a pterodactyl. I had my arms out in front of me and I really, really struggled moving them. It was really quite entertaining for myself and my colleagues and my students to be seeing me walking around looking like that, because I had overdone it. But the funny thing is that I had been only lifting 15 kilos. Oh, God, that's just embarrassing. I'm 27 years old and I can't even lift 15 kilos without hurting myself. So I thought, you know what? I can't be walking around like a pterodactyl. I am going to go and get a sports massage on the way home. So I did that and it made it even worse. And I thought, oh, no, how am I going to do my job? How am I going to function? Luckily, I managed to come back to life yesterday, and I'm now able to kind of lift my arms up enough to write on my whiteboard or to click on my computer to move on the PowerPoint slide. But yes, I have had a bit of a crazy week this week. But you know what? We're here. It's Friday. It's the weekend. And I'm so happy to be able to be speaking to you this evening. So tonight, I am going to be discussing some really important things with a very, very experienced head teacher, deputy CEO, and amazing colleague, actually, and who has, I think, pioneered the importance of life skills within education. So we are going to be discussing that and our strategies about how to teach boys, because we know that nationally there is a gap in attainment between boys and girls, and we're going to be discussing the best strategies, how we can best bring out progress and attainment and our life skills in our young people. So we're going to be discussing this tonight, and we'll be getting your ideas on this and how we can move this forward. So first of all, I'm just going to go to the news and we will continue after then.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio news with Gail Glenn.
According to a report in the Guardian newspaper, black and minority ethnic girls in England are more than twice as likely to be excluded from school as their white counterparts. Agenda, an alliance of more than 50 charities campaigning for the most excluded women and girls, uncovered data following a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Education. This data showed that during the autumn term in both 2018 and 2019, black Caribbean girls were permanently excluded from school at double the rate of white British girls. Gypsy, Roma and traveller communities were four times more likely to face permanent exclusion than white British girls. A Department for Education spokesperson said, "We back head teachers to suspend or permanently exclude pupils where this helps maintain calm classrooms that bring out the best in every child. But this should only be used as a last resort. We expect staff to consider any underlying cause of poor behaviour before making this decision. We know children and young people from some backgrounds are more likely to be excluded. That is why we are working to deliver significantly improved outcomes for children and young people in alternative provision, who are most at risk of permanent exclusion." The Department for Education has announced the expansion of its glasses.
Yes, hello and welcome back to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. So we're really, really lucky this evening to be able to speak to Shelley Bridger, who is a deputy CEO and head teacher at an all-boys academy in Medway in Kent. So hello, Shelley, can you hear me?
Hi, Charlie, I can hear you. I'm hoping you can hear me.
Amazing. We've got you. We've got you. thank you so much for joining us this evening. I know you've had a very busy week getting your school ready for your open mornings next week.
Yes, it's that time of year where all schools are looking to recruit and trying to showcase schools in the best possible way that we can. So there's a lot of preparation for that.
And I'm sure you are absolutely all over it and everything's looking spick and span.
It's looking good.
Brilliant, brilliant. So really excited to be speaking to you tonight because we wanted to do a segment on life skills and teaching boys in particular. And I know that you are a pioneer of something called Skills for Life in your academy and your wider trust. And I'd like you to discuss a little bit about that this evening, if you're okay.
Of course.
Fantastic. So first of all, Shelley, would you be able to tell us a little bit about your own experiences, your career? Where did it all begin and why did you move into teaching?
Good question, Charlie. So for me, I can't say that when I was at school, I had a lifelong ambition to teach. I was probably one of the pupils that, you know, can challenge me now, to be honest. So I left school on the Friday. I started work on the Monday, went into a company in Maidstone as an office junior. Didn't last there very long. So we're going back now to about 1989, I think. So really showing my age now. And I landed a job with the Crown Prosecution Service, which was an amazing opportunity. I stayed with them for 10 years. I worked as a caseworker. I did my ILEX, which was the Institute of Legal Execs. I did the exams with them. Then after, I think, a few years in Maidstone, I decided to transfer up to London and I worked in the finance section up there. I started off in casework, did lots of cases at the Old Bailey, etc., and then decided to go into finance. I then managed a team, stayed in London for about, well, I think I left there about 99, and then decided to just retrain again and became a financial advisor. I seem to fall into careers. That's been my life. So I was a financial advisor for Friends Provident, then Lloyds Bank. Then I went independent and then I became a business consultant. And around, I think, 2004, certain episodes happened in my life where I needed to find a career where I could be about a bit more for my three-year-old daughter at the time. Mm. At the time, my mum was working in a school. She said, oh, they haven't got anything to do with business studies here. Why don't you have a chat with the school? And I was quite used to standing up and giving seminars on group pension schemes and things like that. Mm. So I came in, spoke to my now CEO. We chatted. I came and delivered a lesson to some sixth formers, which I'd never done in my life. And absolutely fell into teaching in that way, because it fit at the time. I had no idea at that time that I would find my absolute calling. And, you know, I've done some quite varied jobs, but nothing has been as satisfying or as tough, actually, as teaching. So I started in business studies. I did my degree. I did my teacher training. Became a head of department, became a head of year, became a head of sixth form, gradually worked my way into the leadership team, did associate first, which is a great program run by my school where you basically immerse yourself into leadership. It's unpaid, but you get lots and lots of experience. Mm. That told me that was what I wanted to do, was go into school leadership, and gradually worked my way through the ranks up to deputy head. I did my MPQH in 2017 when I became head teacher, and I'm still head teacher, but I'm also became deputy CEO in January 2020, and then lockdown arrived. So
amazing.
That's been my journey.
Well, yeah, and you were thrown right into that after taking that role, and you know what a fantastic career you've had, and you know what, long may it continue, and who knows where it might go next? Who knows?
I'm too old now, Charlie. I can't change again. This is
You're not old. You're not old. That's just brilliant. And I think that really gives an insight into where a career can go for our new ECTs that are coming into the system now, and giving them an idea really of all the different avenues and the different lives that they might have had previously and where they might want to go. So that's fantastic. Thank you. So in 2021, what would be your advice for a new teacher coming into the profession? What would your three top tips be?
That's an interesting one, Charlie, because I have a daughter who's currently in third year of university to become a teacher.
Wow.
So I say things to her, primary, not secondary, however.
Right.
I think the best advice I can give is get that balance. It is hard. Those first few years, I think, are particularly hard because you're finding your feet, you're building your resources. So to have that work-life balance, to switch off, to make sure you have enough rest is really important, because that leads me on to the next one, which is you will be exposed to more bugs than you've ever been exposed to, and take lots of vitamins because I think you'll need them, particularly in those first few years. So rest and balance, vitamins and a healthy diet. Watch other people. I think I still learn now. I go in and out of classrooms and I watch teachers daily, and every day I see something that I think I could take away or share with somebody else. And it may be something that you don't like, that you think actually that wouldn't ever, or I don't like how that looked and I do that. But take advice from colleagues as well, because they've all been where you are.
Absolutely. And we're always learning in our profession. Absolutely. So you have had a very, very varied experience in education. And I suppose you've had both positive and negative experiences, because we all do, no matter how much of a positive person we are, we've all had ups and downs. What would be really interesting for me to ask you, I think, is what experience, either positive or negative, has really left the biggest imprint on you as a teacher? How did you cope with it?
Ooh, interesting one. I think there's been so many, Charlie. You know, when I reflect back to my days as a business consultant, where it was all about the, you know, the income, to be honest.
Yeah.
industry, and I took a huge pay cut going into teaching. But what I realised really quickly was, you know, you can have your very, very best days in a teaching profession and your very, very worst days. But those moments where that light bulb goes off for a child, where you've genuinely helped somebody understand or genuinely helped a student is just an incredible feeling. I think for me, there's a few things that's really resonated, and that they're fairly recent, actually. One was through COVID, through the pandemic and lockdown, like every school, we were thrown in to having to teach remotely, wrap our heads very, very quickly around technology. Our parents, our parents have a Facebook group, which the school aren't part of. But ever so often, you know, we get the heads up if they're not happy about something. But it's something that I think is really good for them to talk away from school. Mm. And basically this group clubbed together and they bought us a plaque, which is displayed in my school reception, which just thanked the staff for everything we did and calling home and checking in and delivering food parcels, etc. And, that was one that, you know, brought a bit of a tear to my eye. It was just incredible to have that sort of recognition from you know, our biggest stakeholders, our parents, other than the children. I think alongside that, we also, just before COVID, I believe it was, we had a parent whose son had been through school with us. We'd had many a challenging moment. And she wrote to me at the end, and, you know, often we get cards at the end and some chocolates or some biscuits saying, you know, please pass these out to your staff and thank you for all you've done. And this particular parent named a star after the school and said, you know, she was just so grateful for everything that the staff had done for her son throughout his time. And that, again, really, you know, really hit home. We'd also sadly lost two members of staff over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And leading a staff body and student body and local community through that was very challenging. However, you know, really did bring us together as a school community.
Absolutely. I mean, that is horrific, absolutely mm-hmm. horrific when that happens. And I think that schools are such community-based things. I think things is not the right word to say, but they are communities, and that must be so challenging leading a school through that. But it does, I think, in many ways bring the best out in the people and everyone working together and coming together. So that must be just completely challenging but amazing at the same time.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like to see it as, I think we're a bit of a school family at my school, and it's, you know, like typical families, we have our fallouts from time to time, but actually we're all there for one another, and when it gets really tough, we do lean on one another, and that's an amazing quality.
Absolutely. So I think I'd like people to really know about the background of the school that you lead and the character of the students. What could you tell me about your school? What are you responsible for? And tell me about the character of your boys.
Okay, so we're an all-boys school, non-selective, in a deprived area. So we certainly face our challenges there. Higher than average free school meals, higher than average pupil premium. So, you know, it could be regarded as a challenging school. However, the character of our boys, I would say they're cheeky, they're funny. Every day, they're hilarious, the things that they come out with, and they're quite unique there. I think an incredible quality of the students at our school, they've got, you know, absolutely tons and tons of perseverance, because some of them had some really tough backgrounds, and to see what they can do and how they use, you know, the skills for life that we embed into them. They nearly, I would say nearly all of them, the vast majority, have an absolute love of learning. But by that, I don't mean necessarily a love of learning of academic subjects.
Yeah.
They don't like academic subjects. I guarantee they absolutely love learning about PE, or they love learning about DT or art, or they are the academic ones, or music. I think the majority of our boys do love learning. They just may not love all subjects.
Absolutely. And I can imagine some of the funny things that happen, and the things that they say. And I mean, that you kind of touched on my next question, really, the challenges that your school faces. I mean, in quite a deprived area. But what do you think the main challenges that you as a school currently face are? I mean, forgetting about COVID as we move back into the old normal, what challenges do you foresee for your school going forward?
Well, I think for all schools, you know, we're all trying to, you know, get back to normality. The last 18 months have had a profound effect. And I think, you know, as much as I would love to say, oh, you know, this is it now, we're back to normal and everything's going to be okay, this is still out there. And it's still, we're still being faced with challenges. You know, from what's going on worldwide. But I think, you know, the biggest challenge has been establishing normality again. Literally, after turning the school upside down, we're trying to, well, we have got back to normal. And that's come with its advantages. I think everyone's absolutely shattered, you know, because it's really establishing those routines. And, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is many boys, certainly at my school, there are a number of them that have really not had any boundaries over the last 18 months. So it's, we're almost having to start again. And speaking to other head teachers in the area, we're all saying the same there. So, you know, I think that's probably a national challenge. For my school, we're due our lovely inspectors from Ofsted here. So that's a challenge, making sure we're ready for that. And then the unknown, really, you know, we're trying to prepare for results, exams, but in truth, we still don't really know how that's going to look. So we've just got to do our best and, you know, be reactive to whatever changes are thrown at us next. And I think as a profession, we're very good at doing that.
Absolutely. And I think listeners all across the country will be resonating with your comments there, because I suppose lots of people, lots of schools are thinking the same thing and going through exactly the same challenges. So thank you, Shelley. What we're going to do now is go to the adverts. Please remember that if you would like to speak to me this evening, you can tweet me on my Twitter handle at Mr. Raz Daz. You can send a message in on Podbean app. And of course, you can call in as well. So we'll be back after this.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read-Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Do you struggle with people pleasing? Is it a constant battle managing different and difficult personalities? Why not inspire, challenge, and empower your team through the MAL CPD Essential Coaching Skills for School Leaders course, or gain practical skills to become a strong and compassionate leader through the Assertive Leadership and the Emotionally Intelligent Leader courses. All MAL CPD courses are accredited by the Institute of Leadership and Management. Find out more at www.malcpd.com. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful, and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Hello, yes, and welcome back to The Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle, here on Teachers Talk Radio. Remember, if you would like to join in the conversation, you can tweet me on my Twitter handle at Mr. Raz Daz, or of course, you can communicate with us through the Podbean app. Please make sure you do, because we love hearing your views and your questions. So once again, we're really lucky to be joined tonight by Shelley Bridger, a deputy CEO and head teacher at an all boys academy in Medway in Kent. Welcome back, Shelley.
Thank you.
No problem at all. So we'll continue our conversation then. So we've spoken previously about Skills for Life, your school and your trust's ethos, and it is a really quite an amazing, very radical and very forward-thinking ethos for a school and a trust, and how proud you are to be the driving force behind this culture. What I'd like to know, and I think what listeners would like to know, is what the principles are behind Skills for Life and what is the overarching aim?
So basically, when Skills for Life came in, and this was the chair of our trust who wanted to bring this in, when we sat and spoke about what we wanted our children at school to become and to be, we really thought that education is really for the adults that these children will become. It's about making sure that they start in the right place with the right values and the right consistencies. So what we wanted to do was really make sure that our young people, by the time they left us, would be armed with enough skills, soft skills, and academic progress and everything else that comes naturally with school, but to be able to take their place in society. To be amazing workers, to really understand what interviewers are looking for, to be great workers, to be great parents in the future. Because, again, as I was saying earlier, not all of the students have had the best of upbringings. And do you know what? Sometimes that pattern just repeats itself. So what we wanted to do was ensure that our boys are equipped with the right values going forward. Now, in school life, that really is about how they conduct themselves in lessons, around the academy. We love an acronym in education, and one of the things that we use in secondary is something called Employ Me, which stands for excellence, motivation, perseverance, listening, organised, you, manners, employability. The ultimate aim, we want our students employable. And when we look at all of those skills together, who wouldn't want students that try hard at everything they do, are motivated to get to the end goal, understand that they may not get there first time, so try again, and know that it's okay to fail, but we have to persevere, that listen, that are organised and ready for school, that know what they want for their future, that have good manners, and so ultimately they will be employable. That's really the ethos behind it.
Amazing. And have you seen really good examples of that as students go on into their next stages? Has that been mentioned by employers? Have they approached your school in particular, for example, for your students?
Yeah, I mean, we work closely with a number of employers. I don't know that I can name all of the employers on here, but certainly some of the courses that we run. So there's one particular course that we run that doesn't count on performance tables. We don't particularly get funding for it, but it's 2 years of a 4-year industry recognised qualification. We're one of two schools in the country that do it. And As a head teacher, obviously I have to weigh up, you know, how we perform as a school, but also what's sometimes right for the performance tables and for the school's image, etc., isn't necessarily always right for the students. So it's trying to balance that. And I think Skills for Life lends itself to that. In addition, we have mentors. We have mentors from the business world that come in and work with our students. So they've got that extra layer of somebody independent, you know, really listening to them and talking to them about what we're trying to do. It also resonates through lessons. I mean, I've even put Skills for Life on the curriculum. So our students are taught about, you know, mortgages, what it means to rent, how they can buy a car, what APR stands for and what it means, so that hopefully to stop them getting into debt at a later date. So real life skills, as well as, you know, maintaining eye contact, a good firm handshake, all those things that make that good first impression.
Amazing. And that's the skills that employers are always calling out for. And the amount of times you hear in the media or in, you know, in conversation with other young people that say, oh, I wasn't taught this at school. I can say that I was never taught about mortgages or about how to really conduct myself in an interview when I was at school. And, you know, that is a real pioneering thing that you're doing there, and having that placed firmly in your curriculum as well. That is absolutely fantastic. And how would you say, and why is Skills for Life the right ethos for your community, in the local community? Why is that right for those students in particular?
Look, I think Skills for Life would be right for any community, because you know, who wouldn't want young people equipped with those types of skills? In the area that my school serves, there are lots of future tradesmen. So potentially future entrepreneurs as well, you know, the tradesmen kind of understand how each of their subjects fit into the trade that they're going to do in the future. So, for example, if they, I don't know, want to be, you know, an electrician, it's not just about getting your electrical qualifications. It's understanding how the maths concept comes into that. It's understanding that if they're going to go self-employed in the future, that they may be doing their own invoicing. So really their standard of grammar should be good, and they should know how to write a business letter and, you know, be face-to-face with customers. You know, dealing with customer service is something else that we bring in. So, you know, really that can be applied to all professions in the future.
Amazing. And I mean, you've touched on my next question. And I mean, if I was to, I mean, we've spoken about this previously, about the employ me values. And if I was to pick one, and I'm going to pick employability, if I were to pick just that one Skills for Life value, how has that been developed in particular through the curriculum? Like you've said, that Skills for Life is on the curriculum, you do the interview skills. What other things do they do? Do they get labour market information? Do they get things that are obviously linked to the Gatsby benchmarks? Is that the way that it's sort of rolled out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we all have to comply with the Gatsby benchmarks. And, you know, obviously there is the careers programme that runs in various year groups. We have industry specialists come in and talk to all year groups. We've run apprenticeships. We haven't run apprenticeships. We've had businesses that have offered apprenticeships off the back of often work experience. I'm actually in talks right now with something quite exciting, another trade skill that, again, doesn't count anywhere, but would be absolutely right for the context of our school. And that's what I think we have to home in on. In terms of employability, if our boys from, you know, a young age, and the girls in our trust, and, you know, the children from primary school, if they're able to maintain eye contact, if they're able to write a good business letter, to conduct themselves, to constantly think about, actually, manners don't cost anything, but what a great impression it gives, that they, as second nature, are saying please and thank yous and holding the door open and being courteous. If they are organised, again, they will be more employable. You know, and within that, we look at timekeeping and, you know, following rules, wearing a uniform. And it's really having that dialogue with students to, rather than say, well, do that because I'd say so, it's about, well, you know, this is why we have this rule. And if you were in the workplace and you were on site, you may have to wear steel toe cap boots. Well, in school, part of our uniform is a blazer, for example. So, you know, it's just about linking everyday rules in school to what life's going to be like in employment in the future.
Amazing. A really joined up approach. And it's really interesting to see how that has been weaved through your curriculum, weaved through your everyday school life. And this is where it leads me on to asking, how do you then, because you promote the skills for life with the students, absolutely, how do you then promote those values within your staff body? Are there any particular values specifically used for staff?
Yeah, we have our own set of values for staff. So obviously, as I mentioned, Employ Me is done in the secondary schools. We have something called The Recipe in our primary schools. And, you know, very similar skills, things like respect, enjoyment, cooperation, perseverance, same sort of thing. Mm. With our staff, we expect them to use the Skills for Life language so that, you know, students understand, but also that we are a team, and that our vision and our values is shared by all. We feel so strongly about it that part of our appraisal process is about demonstrating the Skills for Life values, because it's a bit of a non-negotiable, really. We expect our staff to work together and to support each other, to communicate with each other. To, you know, if we agree things to do, if we agree to do things in a certain way, that, you know, we communicate about it, but that we do that. That, you know, we're all striving to be good with you know, the regulator that come in and inspect us. We also are really mindful of staff workload. So there's lots about respect in there that, you know, we try and reply to all communications in a timely manner. We try not to overload people with, you know, lots of emails. And I can't say we will succeed at that one because the emails are crazy. But, you know, it's really down to leaders within the school, not just senior leaders, but, you know, to educate one another that, right, you know, did the whole school really need to be copied into that, because it's just another email for somebody else to read. We expect them all to show good manners and to really listen to what the other person's saying, same skills as we're asking of the students. You know, we expect, when we're talking about being organized, we try not to be last minute. We try to make sure that we're not emailing staff by a certain cutoff, that staff do have a good work-life balance. Mm. And, you know, one of our rules, for example, is senior leaders will not email out after a certain time to request anything. We don't expect part-timers to be checking their emails when it's their day off. And, you know, we want to empower staff. One of our school improvements this year and trust improvement is to, you know, develop leaders, because there are lots of future leaders. But for leaders to get to where they need to be empowered with a bit of a no blame culture, that we trust, we help, we support. But, you know, we allow people to, you know, try things. We're quite forward thinking and we will try new things. Which is, I think, all really positive.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely fantastic, and it's that leads me on to the next part of the show, talking briefly there about your staff wellbeing and workload there, and it's really quite telling that you really do implement this Skills for Life ethos through everything that you do, and that is the example that it sets to the students when they go off into the workplace in the future. So that is so important, and what an amazing ethos this is. So thank you, Shelley. We are now going to go back to the adverts, and we'll continue our conversation after this. Please remember, you can follow me on Twitter and communicate through my Twitter handle at Mr. Razdaz. Back after this.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read-Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Do you struggle with people pleasing? Is it a constant battle managing different and difficult personalities? Why not inspire, challenge, and empower your team through the MAL CPD Essential Coaching Skills for School Leaders course, or gain practical skills to become a strong and compassionate leader through the Assertive Leadership and the Emotionally Intelligent Leader courses. All MAL CPD courses are accredited by the Institute of Leadership and Management. Find out more at www.malcpd.com. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful, and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club.
Yes, hello and welcome back to the Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. It's really good to have your company this evening, and we are discussing some really amazing stuff about skills for life, teaching boys in secondary schools, and we're really lucky to have Shelley Bridger with us tonight. Just before I continue this conversation with Shelley, I just really want to put out some feelers, because I've been tweeting this week about wanting to hear your stories. I want to hear your funny moments in teaching. What has been going on in your classrooms? I've got so many stories that I can share with you, but I'd like to know some moments that you've had, even your most memorable, the funniest thing that a student said to you, or even a funny thing that might have happened to you in the staff room. I've got several things that I could discuss with you, some that I won't discuss with you, but we all have some amazing things that go on during our days, and I can tell you I go home laughing about something, at least one thing every day. So share your experiences with everybody. You can do that through my Twitter handle at Mr. Razdaz, or of course you can communicate with me on here on the Podbean app. So Shelley, welcome back.
Thanks, Charlie.
So we've discussed some amazing things there with Skills for Life, your own experiences, the importance of imparting the skills that our young people need to go on and have a really productive and successful life. Now I'd like to talk to you as a head teacher, as somebody that leads a school and has a massive part of leading a growing trust. You've touched on this previously, but how does your school prioritise staff and student wellbeing in a time of real change in education? We've got a new education secretary coming in now. How do you do this, and what are some of your best practice that you've seen or even implemented yourself in your school?
Well, in terms of obviously while we were in lockdown, I think wellbeing was really important, both for staff to be touching base with students, but equally the school to be touching base with staff. And, you know, that's something that we tried to continue throughout. Since we've been back, I think you've got to look at wellbeing and look at everyone's experience of the last 18 months and understand for some it may have affected them more than others, and in different ways. And the same with children. So it's really being mindful of that and being supportive as well. I think, you know, in my view, and having kind of worked my way up from an unqualified to where I'm at now, I think one of the main things for staff wellbeing is the small things. It's it's that, you know, being mindful of workload, being mindful that staff are really up against it because there are, you know, there's report deadlines due, there's, you know, goodness knows what going on at the same time. And it's trying to make sure that as a senior leadership team, we don't overload with lots of requests, because of course we've all got our own priorities and our own deadlines. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, small things like, and I'm trying to think back to when I first started, being allowed to go and watch my daughter in her Christmas panto was something I never forgot. And I've tried to always make sure that if, you know, if wherever we can and the needs of the school allow it, that we let our staff go and watch their children on their sports day and go and watch them on at their Christmas panto, because they're years you'll never get back. And I think staff think a lot of things like that. That's what makes them go that extra mile for us. And it's that give and take. I think, you know, preparing for things, because I think if you're last minute on everything, that's going to affect well-being, because everything is such a rush job and becomes such a huge stressful area. I think, you know, it's important that schools and trusts invest in things for their staff. So, you know, we've got companies that we use, you know, counselling service, private healthcare, you know, and that there is that type of support there that goes beyond the school building. I think when we're talking for students and their well-being, it's educating them that they know what systems are in place to report a problem. And that's, you know, a huge thing. So, you know, we have something called a red button that students can report things anonymously. And actually, it's a really good thing, because not every child wants to come up and speak to you about what could be troubling them. I think, you know, I spoke earlier about the business mentoring. Again, it's a level of support and helping their well-being, having their own student voice and the notes of those student voice coming directly to me and my team and acting on those things. Again, you know, they're bringing us a problem and we hopefully try and solve it. Having homeschool support workers where schools can afford it, I think that's a wonderful resource that every school should have, so that, you know, schools can reach out into the community and support with well-being there. And just, you know, giving opportunities to students and staff, educating them all the time, letting them know things in a timely way. You know, as well as the nice things like having tea and coffee in the staff room. And
oh, yes.
You know, small things count as well. Providing, you know, donuts or a lunch here and there, it's, you know, not a huge thing, but I think is really appreciated.
Absolutely, and it really does. I mean, I know from experience, if you're walking into the staff room and you see some cakes on the table, or you see some dough, I'm a little bit of a lover of a donut, I won't lie. you know, when you walk through there and you smell that coffee and you see that donut on the side, even though it's saying to you, oh, no, you mustn't do that, that's definitely not, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about the company, but a weight loss group friendly, but you know what, sometimes you've just got to do it, you've got to do it. And it does make you feel so nice, because it makes you think, do you know what, we're appreciated, they've thought about this, and that does it does perk you up. Well, donut always perks me up, so but there we go. I'm really interested, because I speak to other teachers, I speak to other leaders in schools, especially since coming on to this show and speaking to people. And we've been discussing quite a lot recently about the change in education secretary, the departure of the previous one. And what I'd like to know, from a head teacher's perspective, how do you think the government could take education policy forward? What would you really like to see as we go forward past COVID? What would you like to see as a school leader?
I think the government are in a really good position right now to give a bit of an overhaul. And by that, I don't mean changing grading systems again. I mean, I remember when, you know, GCSEs went from, you know, ABC to 9 to 1 and Progress 8 and A-levels, everything changed at the same time. And for educators, it was absolutely horrendous trying to wrap our heads around all of these new systems. But I do think it's an opportunity to review curriculum, You know, is what we're teaching necessarily right to take the future workforce forward? I think there's a big opportunity there. I think they've tried to do some things, you know, with tea levels, sort of further up the age range. But again, for schools to do it, if every school were to do that properly, it would probably diminish some sixth forms because of the amount of, you know, work time that they want. Schools aren't always geared up to be able to offer it like colleges can because we're measured differently. Mm. So I think, you know, they could do some things with, kind of bringing in more skills-based courses that are accessible to schools. And that schools don't need the latest technology because, you know, not all schools are brand new builds with lots of technology there and lots of money. It's not there. So I think, you know, that's where they need to invest, is looking at those real skills-based courses to help the future generation. A bit controversial as well, but I think the government should be getting rid of performance tables as well. Mm. I think this is an opportunity to do it. We haven't had them in the last 2 years. Stop pitting schools against one another. Everyone will be, you know, their grades will be able to be seen by the DfE. Ofsted's reports will be able to be read by the DfE and, you know, potential parents. I just think there is, you know, particularly where in Medway we've got selective and non-selective schools. This is an opportunity to get rid of those. I don't feel they're needed anymore. It's quite antiquated now.
Mm. That's really... I 100% agree with you there. I think that the performance tables are quite divisive in education, and I think that actually in many ways it's quite counterproductive. And I think I grew up in a selective area, and I can remember when we were all doing the 11 plus, and it was like, even when you were 10, 11 years old and you were in competition with your peers, and the way in which it can make a child feel when they're not going off to a grammar, or you're going to the local, that then it was the we were a foundation school then. I mean, I don't know really what the differences are, but I remember it being a foundation school. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't you. It was very disheartening at that age. I mean, I had to be privately tutored in maths and English to try to get me through the 11 plus, and it didn't work. But I think in many ways, going to the school that I went to, it built who I am today. So really, in this day and age, do we need that? Do we need the selective system? That's a topic that we can discuss as well, listeners, if you'd like to send in your ideas there. And Suzanne Barron says that she agrees performance tables need to go, with an exclamation mark. I feel like you're very, very passionate about that there, Suzanne. And hello there to Paywas Server. I think I'm saying that right. I apologise if I'm not. And hello there to Chris Simmons, who's also joining us, a previous caller. So thank you, Shelley. That's a really, really good insight there. And my last question for you, well, in fact, I've got two questions. One I'm just going to throw at you, so I do apologise there. But we have seen how resilient our young people have been over the past 2 years, over COVID. Can you provide an example of, obviously without naming them, but a particular student or teacher that has shone through to you?
Through COVID, or just someone that's just shone through?
Oh, we'll go just in particular.
Okay, I have a student who has left my school. If any people from my school will know exactly who I'm talking about now, if they're listening. This young man came over from Slovakia when he was 7, not speaking a word of English, was put into a nursery when he should have been, I think, year 3 or 4, because of his lack of English, joined us in year 7, and didn't really know what path he wanted to take, discovered boxing when he was year 9, and we've got many, many, been an all-boys school and with 2 boxing clubs quite near us. It's something that we offer after-school clubs and things and work very closely with them. And this young man discovered, I've never seen such grit and determination for a young man to not only smash his GCSEs and get through them, but also go on to not only become an excellent boxer, but also to win Youth Olympic Gold He's now turned professional. And while he was in sixth form with us, we spoke about, you know, having a backup plan that, you know, it's all very well. And he said, yeah, I want to be a world champion. And I actually think he will be. We spoke about having a backup plan. And in business studies in year 12 and 13, he created his own fashion line. And that's incredibly, you know, he's absolutely inspirational and just the nicest person you could ever meet, and absolutely lives and breathes the Skills for Life values, and openly says that they helped him so much. He's now, you know, doing interviews on BBC and things. And when I think back to when he was in year 10 and 11 and could barely speak in front of anyone, I think, you know, what we've done and his hard work, no doubt, and, you know, his family's support and his friends' support and the support of so many staff, he's, you know, he just shows you what can be done if you put your mind to it.
What an inspiration to your other students as well. I mean, are you able to get this young man in speaking to your students?
Only last week, Charlie, he was in doing assemblies for our boys. And, you know, it was the cutest thing, actually, because the year sevens, who have only been with us a few weeks, we foolishly said to 184 of them, yes, you can have a selfie with him. 2 hours later, and every lock screen in the school is pretty much this boxer with them in the hall. But yeah, he's absolutely inspirational. He really is.
Amazing, amazing. That is just testament, really, to everything that you've spoken about this evening. What an amazing, amazing student, and victory for him as well.
Yeah, there are many more of them, Charlie. May not have made it to the heights that he's going to make it to, but have been incredibly successful in what they've set out to do. And, you know, bottom line, that's why we're in this job, isn't it?
Absolutely. So my last question for you, and I just want to know, because I am asking lots of people this, I am tweeting this out, listeners, please do engage with me. Shelley, what has been your funniest moment that you can recall during your time in school?
Oh my God, thanks Charlie for throwing do you know what, there's been so many. When I was teaching, I'm like the clumsiest person ever. I wear the most ridiculous shoes because I'm too short, so I wear big high shoes so that, you know, I feel a little bit taller leading an all-boys school. And it's been known that I've fallen off those shoes once or twice throughout my time. I've stacked it a number of times. We'll say no more on that. Much to the
benefit
of many others.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, listen, thank you so, so much for your time this evening. And I'm sure that so many people have not only resonated with the things that you've said, but really have been quite inspired by lots of the bits about Skills for Life and what you've done with your career and now leading your school and also having a massive part in leading the wider trust. So thank you, Shelley, and we hope to speak to you on here again soon.
Oh, more than welcome, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Have a lovely weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye. So yes, once again, thank you to Shelley, who has shared some amazing information there surrounding Skills for Life, the ethos and the way of life of her school, and the trust of which she has amazing, a part in leading, a deputy CEO who started her career as an unqualified teacher and worked her way through the ranks into leading a school. What an amazing thing there. So what we're going to do now, we're going to go to the news and I will be speaking to you again shortly.
This is Teachers Talk Radio and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn.
According to a report in the Guardian newspaper, black and minority ethnic girls in England are more than twice as likely to be excluded from school as their white counterparts. Agenda, an alliance of more than 50 charities campaigning for the most excluded women and girls, uncovered data following a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Education. This data showed that during the autumn term in both 2018 and 2019, Black Caribbean girls were permanently excluded from school at double the rate of white British girls. Gypsy, Roma and Traveller communities were four times more likely to face permanent exclusion than white British girls. A Department for Education spokesperson said, "We back head teachers to suspend or permanently exclude pupils where this helps maintain calm classrooms that bring out the best in every child. But this should only be used as a last resort. We expect staff to consider any underlying cause of poor behaviour before making this decision. We know children and young people from some backgrounds are more likely to be excluded. That is why we are working to deliver significantly improved outcomes for children and young people in alternative provision, who are most at risk of permanent exclusion." The Department for Education has announced...
Yes, hello and welcome back to Teachers Talk Radio Twilight Show with me, Charlie Rozelle. So tonight we have been speaking about teaching boys in our secondary schools and the importance of imparting life skills on them. We've had an amazing discussion with a head teacher who has been the driving force behind the Skills for Life ethos in their school and now their wider trust, including primary schools, and the importance of teaching our young people of how to conduct themselves in an interview, how to know what APR means when they're looking at their money, how to know how not to get into debt in their futures, and leading a productive and successful life. What an amazing extra to not only add into the curriculum, but also to have as their way of life in their school. I think that is something that could be really, really inspirational to many of our colleagues around the country. And I'd be really interested to know how your school does this. What do you do? Or even as an individual teacher, what do you do in your lessons in order to build our students' life skills? I can give you an example of how I do that in my lessons. So, for example, if I'm teaching something along the lines of aid projects that are taking place in, somewhere like Ethiopia with goat aid, for example, a big part of one of our geography case studies, in fact. And what I'm able to say to students, you know what, if you were in the future wanting to go around the world and help people at the same time to experience different places, to experience different cultures, this is the sort of job you could do. This is where geography can take you. This is the earnings that you could potentially have, but also this is the impact that you could have on the planet, whether that's to do with people, whether that's to do with the environment that they're in. It's really important to show our students where their studies can take them. And teaching a subject like geography, many of us know it is a bit of a Marmite subject, which obviously is quite useful in many ways, because when students choose it because they want to do it. Which is why it's so important when you're either, you know, depending on when your options year is, to have that. In my school, my options year is year nine. So we've rebuilt our Key Stage 3 curriculum in geography to ensure that it is as engaging as it possibly can be, to ensure that the students that want to do geography, that it could then lead into a future career, they've then got that, and we're imparting those skills and knowledge onto them. So that is extremely important. So once again, thank you to Shelley Bridger, who has spent her Friday evening discussing this with us. So I would just like to say a very warm welcome to many of you who are tuning in tonight. I've got Suzanne Barron, who is a regular listener to the show. Really great to have you here this evening. And also from a very, very funny long name there, but I can see in your profile picture, there's two lovely ladies there, one in a graduation hat hat. I don't really know what we actually call those things, you know. I just remember chucking mine up in the air at some place in Luton. But welcome and thank you for enjoying the show. Always great to have you all with me. Obviously, if you would like to get involved or if you would like to join in the conversation this evening, please do. Give us a call, send us a message, tweet me at Mr. Razdaz. That's my Twitter handle. We are able to discuss some fantastic things, and it's really great to get everybody's ideas and sharing knowledge, sharing what we're all about, and that is teaching. So what I'm going to start talking to you about now is an exclusive that TES News have got today, which was posted at 5 a.m. this morning. 5 a.m. Now, I'm not going to lie, I have to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning because I have to, I'm not going to lie to you, it takes me at least 45 minutes in order to really wake up. And my eyes are like, oh, I can't wake up. They don't want to open. And then I've got to have my shower, have my coffee, do my hair, which, yes, okay. I know, I'm a bloke. I shouldn't be spending forever on my hair, but do you know what? I have to before it goes completely grey. And as my students keep pointing out to me, yes, I am starting to go grey. It's devastating, but I divulge. But yes, 5 a.m. this morning, this was posted on TES News, that the NAHT, the School Leaders Union, says that ministers need to increase school funding above level seen in 2010 to meet the challenges ahead. Now, we all know working in education that funding is also always a very hot topic. When we're talking about the money that the central government provides to schools, you get people saying, oh, funding hasn't changed. It was ring fenced. It's got less. To be honest, I never know really what's going on with that because you get so many different people saying different things. But we all know, however, that it is a challenge. Financing schools is obviously always a challenge because there are so many things that we want to do, so many different initiatives and things that we want to bring in to help our students to not only progress academically, but in order for them to really gain the educational experience that we all want them to have. We work with young people who deserve the best experience. They get one chance at education. And there are so many things that we want to do. And it now seems to be back in the news about education funding. And the teachers union for school leaders is saying that it needs to improve. Now, they're talking about how that there's an increased level of deprivation, mental health needs. And they're calling this a funding crisis for pupils with SEN and disabilities. So SEND. And really why there is a need for a major change and a major increase in funding in schools. And they've also said that because of COVID and Brexit, which I would question there, really. I don't really understand. I mean, somebody might be able to give me a bit of insight here, how Brexit means that there's a need for an increase in funds in education. I'm always up for increase in funds in education because that means that we can do more for our students. But I don't really understand how Brexit comes into that. So if somebody could give me a bit of insight there. But the word perilous has been used. Perilous. Perilous moment. In order to equip our younger generations to face the future because of all of the issues that we've got going on. I mean, I can give you a little example of that. I mean, on my way home today, coming home, I mean, I've got about a 45 to an hour journey home because it always takes me longer to get home. I don't know why that is. I mean, I think going to work in the morning always seems to take me less time unless there's traffic. Sometimes I won't lie to you, I do stop off at the service station and go for a cheeky Krispy Kreme. I don't know if I'm allowed to do a bit of product placement there. I do apologise if I shouldn't have done that, but there we go. But I do love a donut on the way to work and a decent coffee because it means that I'm absolutely on it when I walk through those gates. But when I was on my way home today, oh my word, teacher going home for the weekend. And what are we seeing? We're seeing people panic buying fuel. Oh, crikey. I was listening to a radio show this morning And they were saying they had somebody on from an industry body for fuel. That sounds very, very interesting. But they had somebody on this morning and they were saying there is absolutely no need to be panic buying fuel. That's right, Britain. No need to be panic buying fuel. And yet we have still got people that are panic buying fuel on their way, probably on their way home from work or whatever. And I was in a queue. I was in a queue on my way home, trying to get home so I could present this radio show to you. And the worst part about it really was that I didn't have any snacks in the car with me at the time. And I've usually got quite a large amount of certain orange flavoured biscuity cakes in my glove compartment, or I've got some sort of snack, and I didn't have anything. And I was quite upset about this because I thought, you know what, these people are panic buying. They've been told not to, and now they're doing it. I mean, we ask our students to follow rules in school, and I think it might be about time. I mean, you might disagree with me. Maybe you might think that it's time to be panic buying and causing Mr. Rozelle to be sat in a traffic jam on the way home without any form of donut treat. But, you know, but these are the challenges, one of the challenges that we're facing now. And I can understand that we need to allow our young people to build resilience in dealing with the challenges that we are now facing as a nation going forward. But there seems to be new things coming every day. And I mean, you hear different things, different reasons as to why these things are going on, which is why I'm asking you, teachers, is this partly because of Brexit? Do we need more funding in schools because we left the European Union? I don't know. I don't know my thoughts on that. Please tell me. I'm being unbiased here. Please let me know your thoughts. And thank you. Yes, you've changed your name now. And thank you for saying it's a great show. I'm really loving having all of you listening to me. I'm sure that you probably think, oh, God, what's he talking about now? But you know what? It's a Friday night. All of our brains are a little bit fried, ready for the weekend. Anyway, but what I'm talking about at the moment is the call for record school funding to help COVID recovery. This was a article in the TES News today at 5 a.m. this morning saying that the country suffered a shock like of which we haven't seen since the end of the Second World War. Could we really disagree with that? I don't think we can. But they're saying that we have got a unique moment at the moment to be thinking about what it is we need in determining what schools are for, what education is for, and how we fund the system going forward. And I think that links in very nicely to what we were discussing earlier with Shelley talking about how she would like to see the government potentially looking at removing performance tables, really having a look at an overhaul of education. Maybe we are at a time where it is time to press that reset button. I know some of you are probably thinking that could be a bit of a Dexter's Laboratory moment. Don't press that button because, oh, what could happen? But then there's some of us that are actually sitting here thinking, and I completely agree with what Shelley was saying there, that we do need to have an overhaul. We do need to look at what is going on. Do we need these performance tables? No, we don't. And I don't think many teachers would be sitting there disagreeing with this, because what good do these performance tables do? They are putting school up against school. They are creating a competition, a marketplace within education. I mean, look, no matter whether you are on the left, on the right, in the middle, a nomad, whatever you are politically, I think most people can agree that league tables in schools, are they necessary? Really? I mean, I was listening to an audiobook a few months ago when I was on one of my ridiculously long walks in the evenings when I was desperately trying to get off my gut. And I was listening to an audiobook, and it was Tony Blair's audiobook, and it was about the changes in the country in the 1990s and the introduction of the inspectorate in schools in the 90s. And there seemed to be a bit of a thing in there, a bit of a theme back then of, oh, we must have this, we must have a marketplace, we must have an inspections, we must have this, we must have that. But then when you speak to other teachers and they say to you, do you know what, it was better before all of this. And I struggle because in my mind, I've only ever known this system. I'm a young, I'm putting that out there, I'm still very young teacher in my career. And I don't know the previous system. I don't know what it was like, what it was like to be a part of that then. And I remember being in school during that time. Of course I do. I remember all of these amazing things that happened then. I mean, I went to a school that I now realise had a PFI rebuild that was completed in 2004. And I started there in September 2005. And the facilities we had in that school were second to none. It was absolutely quite amazing to go from a small little village primary school where you're quite cotton walled in many ways to not really see anything other than the people that you live amongst in your local village. It was a Church of England primary school, so we went down to the church to do the harvest festival. You did the amazing carol services, and really, the experiences that we had in primary were to, you know, make use of our connections with our French connection there. We had a connection, a twinning association with Ambou-Capelle. In France, we went on a trip there. We went to an amazing outdoor education centre when we were in year six. That was the goal. You'd always get to go there whilst you were at this primary school. But when we went to secondary, it had an inbuilt cinema. It had design and technology labs and electronics labs and something called Scantech 2000. Oh, that takes me back. Playing with robots, graphic design, all of these things these were brand newly built, and a canteen that looked like something off of High School Musical. And you know, they had the funding. I don't know. It was a PFI. I mean, I don't know if they really did have the funding. I don't really know how that works. But these things that we had back then, completely different to how the government at the moment see funding and how the government see school buildings. And it's changed so much, so, so much. And yes, okay, maybe we need extra funding. Yes, okay, we need, across the country, new build schools. But are PFIs the way forward? I don't know. I was speaking to somebody a few months ago about PFIs, and they were saying, do you know what? In many ways, they're one of the worst things that schools can do because of restrictions of how you can use the building. Some schools have had mortgages on these buildings. And you think, wow, this is education. This is our students' futures. Is there not a streamlined approach that the government could be taking to make sure that our students gain the best experience, taking a little bit less of a focus on schools having to fund things themselves, when actually, surely this is a national priority? What do you think about this? I mean, I've got Leanne talking here. Hello, Leanne. I think we've spoken before on my show. Thank you for joining us once again. You've said that you've had to really change your mindset this year about how much I buy personally for my classroom. It's so tough. Now, yes, I think in many ways that could resonate with lots of teachers around the country, because we all do it. We're all guilty of it. We all buy things for our classrooms. I mean, I love making my classroom an extension of me. I love having my magnets from my holidays on my metal cabinet. I love having my frothy coffee machine. I keep mentioning it, but it is my new favourite thing. I love having that available to me. I love having little pictures around that experiences that I've had in my life. But yes, of course, you fund that yourself. You know, it's not something that you can go, oh, excuse me, finance, can I have some money for a new coffee machine just for myself? Absolutely not, because that is not going to benefit your students. But I mean, it might well do. I mean, it puts me in a very good mood, and when I'm in a good mood, my students have a much better day. But when I think you're talking about how, you know, you see these Pinterest classrooms, you see these amazing classrooms that, especially in America, this happens quite a lot, where teachers are funding their own classrooms, making them the most immersive learning experience rooms for their students. And Is that right that teachers are having to do that in America? I mean, I suppose that must happen in this country as well. But you're, you know, Leanne, you've said again, there's pictures on social media of government funded classrooms and teacher funded classrooms. It is very true. And, but I think, you know, we are as well responsible for our own classrooms, making sure that they are real learning spaces. I mean, I'll give you a little example about that, you know, and I have really made it my priority in my classroom since returning back to my classroom, hurrah, after bubbles last year, of making my display boards fit for allowing the students to use them for their learning. In geography, we follow a specific specification that requires lots of case studies to be learned by our students. So we've got case study boards in all of our geography classrooms now. And the beauty of it is that every geography classroom in my department has got different case studies. Because that then means that we're able to then say, do you know what, we're going to visit Mr. Butters' classroom today. Or do you know what, sorry, I've just mentioned Mr. Butters. I apologise there, sir. But we can swap classrooms potentially. We can use our classrooms as a learning resource. And that is really, really important. And I think, you know what, I'm going to buy a potted plant for my classroom. I want to have a palm tree in my corner because, do you know what, I love seeing palm trees. And I think it's really important that we do that. But you know what, there is absolutely a cutoff point. And I think that is where lots of teachers, including myself over the years, have had to really sit there and think, okay, enough's enough now. No more spending on this classroom from my own money. But you know what? Sometimes it is necessary, and I can understand why many people do it. Thank you. So not sure how the government funding is divided amongst schools across the UK, but surely it should gear towards making every school as good as it can be. Would that not mean foregoing funding on a more privileged school in order to boost the facilities at more underprivileged schools in similar areas? Maybe higher funding for SEN and PP. Now, that's a really interesting comment there, because there is a large focus, we know, for target groups, SEN, pupil premium, pupil premium plus. And I think something that's really close to my heart is the looked after children. I've told you before, technically, if I was at school now, I would be classed as a looked after child, because I myself am adopted. And I have a real, real interest in the education and the life chances of our young people that are potentially in the system of looked after children. And actually, do you know what, I'm going to say it, my personal opinion there is that they need extra funding, and I think that the government should be doing much more in order to support our looked after children in education, because these are children a lot of the time that come from nothing, have no opportunity other than what is given to them as and when it can be. And I know that if I hadn't have had the opportunities that I've been given and the help and support that I have had over my life, I certainly would not be where I am today, being able to help other young people get on in life. And I'm very passionate about that. And I would imagine that most teachers in this country would be absolutely the same. Jenny, thank you so much for getting in touch. Don't ask me how much I've spent on books and subscriptions. Absolutely. Do you know what? I remember signing up to this this geography thing a few years back. It was a subscription for a GIS system that, quite frankly, I've now found a new free one that is much better. But I remember subscribing to that, and I was like, do you know what, department, use it, please use it. But personally, you know, maybe I need to think here, do you know what, should I be doing that? Probably not, but it was useful at the time, so I didn't mind. But you live and learn. You live and learn about things, and you learn as well, especially as a head of department, you know, what can be funded, what can't, what can I ask for and what can't I? And it's really important that you're planned in your approach with that, have a real clear outline and a plan of what you want your departments to be, what you want your how you want your departments resourced. Really important that you do that. And I've made that a real priority myself since taking over the geography department in my school, of really ensuring that we are properly resourced, properly planned, and we are in an absolutely amazing position now. So that's absolutely there. So there are so many amazing programs in the arts, but I guess a lot of young people don't know about them. I it was really interesting, actually, to speak to somebody about the art curriculum and how that has reduced a lot over time since the Gove reforms, and really where it is now. But I see amazing things going on in my school with the art that our students come out with, and I can't even draw that. Now this one is my funniest moment, actually. But I remember in 2017, this was, I decided that I would try to draw a cow on the board. I don't know why. Well, we were doing food. We were talking about food miles. And I was talking to the students about cows and methane and cow. Sorry, guys, some of you might be eating your dinner, but cow dung, and the impact that that has on the planet. And I was discussing that with them, and they were like, "Sir, can you draw a cow on the board? I don't know how to draw a cow." This thing looks like a Frankenstein cow, crossed with a pig, crossed with a goat, crossed with a dog, crossed with a cat, anything that you could think of. And do you know what? I looked at it afterwards and I was just laughing. I couldn't stop laughing because I'm stood here trying to model this to my students. I'm trying to say, this is how you draw a cow. Oh my word. They were laughing. I was laughing. But anyway, I divulge. But yes, that's one of my funny moments. So there's been many over my years in my school, and you go home laughing absolutely every day because they are the funniest human beings that I've ever met in my life, and they never fail to make you smile, never fail to make you laugh. And it's the cheeky grin sometimes, because you look at them and you might, you know, have to correct their behaviour at times, as we all do. But it's sometimes you say something to them and they'll look at you and they'll laugh, or they'll pull that cheesy grin, and then you just end up laughing, or you end up, you know, smiling, thinking, don't laugh, don't laugh, don't laugh, turn around so they can't see you. Then another one will go, "Sir's laughing, isn't he?" And it's just comical. And this is why I love where I work, because we have the best days and we have the best fun. We have the best laughter, and you just can't beat it. And I think that is a massive part of the job, because if you're, you know, one of these teachers that stands at the front, you're lecturing and you're, you know, you must do this, you must do that, and there's no room for humour in your lessons, then, you know, really? I went for an interview at a school a few years ago, and I tried to make the students laugh because that's what I knew. I knew that I could do that. I knew that I could make the students in front of me laugh. And because I like to think that I'm quite an engaging teacher, and that's one of my qualities that I'm really proud of. And I remember being told by the people that interviewed me, "Oh, no, we don't do humour in this school." And I thought, really? I wouldn't be able to. No. And, oh, God. I love laughing through my day. Sometimes you hear me cackling down the corridors and people must think, "Oh God, he's off again." But you've got to laugh, you've got to smile, and you've got to, whenever you see people in the corridors, smile at them. They'll pass that smile on to somebody else. And it's so important that we think about well-being, so important that we think about bringing each other up. And Shelley mentioned earlier that in her school it's like a family feel, and I think that is really important in a school, because when you all come together and you've Shelley used the words lean on, and you're able to lean on somebody and to be able to really build relationships with your colleagues, and they do become your work family, they become your second family, in fact, because really when you think about it, you spend more time in your day with your colleagues and your second family than many of us spend with our own families. And that is why it's so important. And I think, yes, you're absolutely right there, Leanne. Sarcasm? Is it an ism? Sarcasm and laughs gets her through some days. And you know what? It's absolutely right there. So we've got another comment here. "I love my classroom to be a calm environment where my students can laugh along with me, but know the boundaries for work is work. Fun is fun. Work street. And, you know, you find your... you find your kids make better progress as a fantastic mutual work relationship grows." That's absolutely correct there. Engagement, relationships, a love of learning is so, so important. What an amazing way to end our show tonight. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed it. and I look forward to speaking with you next week. Make sure you continue to tune in this evening to our next show. Thank you once again. Have a lovely weekend. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.